Parsons is 6'9" swinging at you to shoot the three.
Urban Meyer, a liar. Don't believe a word he said.
Look at you go.
Look at that. It's like seeing a kid ride a bike.
And I'm going to law school, baby. It all starts here.
Hello and welcome to the Alligator Sports Podcast. This is the show for Tuesday, May 26, 2009. I'm Adam Berry, the assistant sports editor and softball beat writer for Alligator Sports. And joining me today are...
Kyle Maestri, incoming football writer and columnist.
And joining us in the other corner, football beat writer and columnist, Phil Kegler.
Phil is insufferable at this point of the night. I'd just like that to be noted right now. He's been doing his ESPN announcer voice for at least 15 minutes straight.
Can't help being this great, baby.
McFall's going to be so angry when he listens to this. Like, he may not do another one after this.
I'd argue that most of our listeners might be angry after hearing Phil do that. We got a lot
most
of talk.
Most girls are not.
Everyone out there, Phil's only one third of the show. Don't worry.
We've got a lot to talk about on today's show. Huge show. Tons to talk about. Don't know if we're going to fit it all in here. We've got the Nick Kalaitis news that he's going to play basketball in Greece. We've got the U.S. softball team. We've got the U.S. baseball team. We've got all three of our weekly segments, Gator Guarantees, Reggie Nelson Awards for Excellence in the Field of Sport, and Kyle Jackson Bad Angles of the Week. And who else, you know, who knows what else is going to come up in this last show. I didn't know
anything
last week.
Anything can happen. Yeah, especially when I'm here.
I mean, last week I didn't know we were going to be talking about the most fittest dudes in America featuring Tim Tebow.
That's
so.
Right.
All right, let's start it off with the Nick Kalaitis stuff. Nick Kalaitis has signed a contract to play professional basketball in Greece for Panathinaikos. I think I'm butchering that terribly. He is going to be paid $1.1 million with plus house, car, tax credits and everything. And he is therefore bypassing the NBA draft and not coming back to Florida. So all of you who are debating, is he going to come back or is he going to go to the NBA? He's doing neither. He's going to Greece to play basketball.
You could have made a lot of money betting neither with your friends, by the way.
Absolutely. All right, Kyle, what do you think of this move?
I had multiple strong reactions to this, I guess. The first being, this is absolutely insane. It can't be any worse for Florida Gator basketball. The players clearly don't like playing for Billy Donovan. I think at this point it's safe to say that. You've had multiple people go through with transfers in the last year. You've had Jay Lucas and Alan Chaney. You've had another guy transfer and then come back, or say he's going to transfer and then come back, and Alex Tyus. And now you have another guy who'd rather go overseas than stay at Florida. So it's really just getting out of hand. I think that Donovan kind of needs to reevaluate how he's connecting or not connecting with his players. I don't want to be too critical of the guys. I think he's a really good coach, but I think there is something to be said about chemistry at this point.
Yeah, I think there's something interesting to be said about Donovan's ability to coach like teams with high expectations over sense. I mean, obviously, you can't say to complete degree because he had the national champions coming back and he you know, took them to another national title. But it's like we've had these expectations. You know, Nick Kalaitis, really highly touted, did nothing at Florida. Then you have the 04s who won a title when they really weren't expected to do too much. I mean, yeah, I think it's nothing... I think it's bad for everyone, to be honest. I mean, I'm not a fan of the Nick going to Greece move. I mean, I see it as a little bit of a cop-out in a sense. Okay, you're getting a mil, but it's like, I know I'm not moving up to the lottery this year. I know that my workouts aren't going to move me up there, and I don't want to come back to college because I don't want to risk the fear of failure or not being able to play with Boynton or playing on a Florida team that doesn't make the tournament again. So I'm going to go over to Greece. Everybody's going to say, oh, I just want the money. It's a nice little cop-out. I can come back to the NBA maybe. I don't know. Maybe I don't care about playing the NBA. I say I do. I mean, it's like, whatever, man. Like, you're going to go over to Greece. I don't really care what you do over in Greece. It's not the NBA. I care what you... College basketball, big, you know, big stage. NBA, big stage. You go over to Greece, it's like, yeah, you might be a really good European player. I hope you're happy over there.
Yeah, this is tough because I don't blame him for going to Greece and doing what he's doing. He's going to make tons of money. He's going to get to play basketball. It's a good deal over there. When I talked to his dad last summer, because I wrote an article on him playing on the Greek national team or the under 20 or team, whatever it was. It wasn't the actual national team. Pat Kalaitis, his brother, was going through the process of signing with the team over there and stuff. And he was saying how nice it is over there for the players, because not only do you get your contract, but they don't tax you. You get a house, you get a car. You get all these perks that come along with it, and it really is. It is a good deal, but you could tell he really liked it, and I guess I should have shown some foresight there, but that definitely factored into this, I would say. I haven't talked to his dad yet, but I would assume...
Is his brother still over there playing?
Yeah, his brother's still over there. I forget which team he's with right now. He's in the Greek League, too, I believe, so
That had to have factored into this. It definitely didn't hurt.
Yeah, I mean, if I'm Nick Kalathis, it's not like it's a bad deal. I mean, like, he's winning in a sense. If I am Nick Kalathis, maybe I make this deal. You're going to win. You're going to get a mil. You're going to play in Greece. Probably, I mean, you have standards, but it's standards you can probably definitely exceed. But it's like you're not maybe taking the highest track to your highest potential. It's like, stay here, get challenged, go to the NBA.
See, but I'm going
to
make the argument that this is a great move for him personally. I mean, you get all the money that you would probably not get as an NBA draft pick. Like, the 14th pick in last year's draft got paid $1.4 million. With all the stuff he's going to get over there, he's going to get paid just as much.
I had a debate with McCall about this on the way back, and I think we both made good points, but I agreed more with Phil when we had it, and McCall, like, kind of agreed with you. In the short term, it's really good for Kalathis in that he can go play over there and be real good for a few years or whatever, make a lot of money. But as far as coming back to the NBA, I think it really hurts him here because it's really hard. I think it's easier to prove yourself and prove development in college basketball than it is overseas.
Isn't Brandon Jennings the kid who went over to Italy to play? And what's he rated, like, this year's draft?
Yeah.
He's top 10?
But that's a little bit of a different scenario because you're drafting off straight potential with him coming out of high school anyway. With Kalathis, it's like they've had 2 years to evaluate him. So with Brandon Jennings, he's really sat on the bench over there. And Kalathis will probably do the same. They sit young Americans over there because they like more experienced guys that takes a little time to adjust to the game. So Brandon Jennings, you're still drafting. Like, it's the same level whether he sat on the bench or he played in high school. You haven't really seen him against really good competition yet. So it's still straight potential. Whereas I think more teams might be like, okay, we don't. It's not necessarily potential with Kalathis. We've already seen him. We'd like to see him make a jump in his game, and he could do that here at Florida, but I don't think you're going to see him make a jump in Greece, especially if he's sitting on the bench the first couple of years.
Absolutely, yeah. I definitely think that about the jump. And it's almost like, in my sense, what I meant about like the cop-out, it's like a cop-out as a competitor, because it's not like he came here and had a whole bunch of success in Florida. He's here 2 years, individually, a lot of success.
Mm-hmm.
Freshman of the co-SEC Freshman of the Year, All-SEC First Team as a sophomore. But he didn't, raise the level of the guys around him. That's something you love to see out of great players. Didn't make the tournament either 2 years. Is that Kalathis' fault? No. But, like, as we talked about one time, a million podcasts ago, it's like he was one of the best players not to make the NCAA tournament, you know, at his time to school.
Yeah, I would disagree with that. I'm just talking about for him personally. I don't think this is a bad move at all. You know, he still gets to play basketball, which, you know, maybe he would play less in the NBA, I think, than he will in Greece, right, Kyle?
Yeah, but your foot's in the door at that point. I think it depends on what your goals are. If your goal is to have a successful NBA career, this is not the way to go about it. And another point I tried to make to Mike is that, the longer you stay over there, the harder it is to get back into the NBA because you're not as young as you used to be, pretty much. They want guys based on potential because the overseas leagues aren't the same as NBA leagues, so it's not going to translate as evenly. And an example of this is Anthony Parker, Candace Parker's brother, who now plays on the Toronto Raptors, who everyone knows. He went to Bradley for college, wasn't that good coming out, or he was that good, but it was a small school. He went and played overseas for multiple years. I'd say probably 7 years or so. I don't have the exact time.
Mm-hmm.
But he played with one of the Israeli teams that's really good. It was like Tel Aviv or something like that. Like I forget which one. But for probably 2-3 year span there, he was considered the best player in the world, not in the NBA.
Mm-hmm.
And it took him multiple years to get back. I'm sure he didn't sign a fat contract coming back. I mean, I'm sure it was good. And now he's just like, you know, he's a nice player in the NBA. He's not exactly a superstar, and he's kind of reached all he can reach. I feel like if he would have stayed here and played against the best players, maybe you develop a little bit more.
Yeah.
But if your goal is just to get paid to play basketball and live a nice life, I mean, Kalathis is certainly going to do that. He didn't screw anything up here, really. I just think if his goal is, I want to be a big-time NBA player, this isn't how you do it.
That's what I'm saying. I think maybe his goal is, you know, just to, you know, go over there, play basketball. He is a Greek citizen, and he wants to be on that Greek Olympic team, too. That's a huge goal, and this is really going to help him do that, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's just like, he's not like an American basketball star. You know, it's not like, we always pictured him, like, I always pictured him as, like, you know, the face of Florida basketball. Like, he's the guy, you know, he's going to break into the NBA. He's going to be a great point guard. But yeah, like Kyle said, like if all you want to do is make money and play basketball and you love basketball and you're a Greek citizen, you want to play in the Greek national team, good for Nick Kalathis.
Right.
But it's like you're not going to be like a name. You're not going to be like, oh, you know, I mean, or if you are, it's going to take a lot more work to get there than it would have.
Yeah, and that's kind of McCall's point. Like, look, guys, he's going to get paid a lot of money. He has the chance to be kind of like a Greek hero over there if he ends up landing with the national team and leading a Greek team. And I kind of agree with that. Like, he could be like really praised over there. But, I mean, I agree more with Phil's side, though, in that you're, as a competitor, those guys who have the fire, the best players in the world, they want to play against the best and beat the best. What good is it really if you're beating, if you're the best in Europe or you're the best in Greece? I mean, if he makes it with the national team, good, you get to get your butt whooped by the Americans every year or the Spanish team or whoever else. So how much is it of an accomplishment is it to make the Greek national team, really? I don't know. So
does he have that fire, though, to be like one of the top NBA stars? Has anybody ever seen that?
Yeah, I mean, like, maybe we've just seen Nick Kalaitis wrong. I mean, like, because it's, you know, it seems like he never really, like, wanted to step in the limelight as much as we thought anyway, because he was never this big late-game closer. I know we've had this discussion multiple times. You know, it's not like the end of the game, Nick Kalaitis is like, I gotta have the ball, I'm going to score.
Yeah.
Like, the end of the season, it was like, hello, Nick Kalaitis, like, paging Nick Kalaitis, and they don't make the tournament again.
I got a couple things to say about this. First of all, I don't want to seem like I'm bad-mouthing Nick Kalaitis, because you guys know I'm a huge Nick Kalaitis fan. I like him a lot.
I agree. He's going to be good.
But, and I also think that he could be a good NBA point guard. I think he can be a starter in the league for 10 or 15 years. I really do, if he would have went that route. But I think the problem, one of the things that I like about him so much as a member of the media is how nice and mild-mannered and really down-to-earth he comes across. He's not real arrogant at all. He's very polite. He doesn't have kind of that nastiness. Maybe you need to be one of the really good players. And, like, it's kind of, I don't know if it's sad that it's that way, but it is that way. If you look at these guys who are really the best players, they all got a mean streak in them that they can just, you know, they want to just annihilate you. And I'm not sure Kalaitis has that in him. He'd rather go have fun playing basketball, I think, than embarrass guys out there.
Sorry, I'm laughing because you said polite. I think of when both of us met him one time, the first time covering Nick Kalaitis, and we introduced ourselves, you know, which is what you do in an interview, you know, say, hi, I'm Adam Berry from The Alligator. He says, oh, hi, I'm Nick Kalaitis. Exactly. Nice to meet you.
Right.
Like, that to me is a great example of what you're talking about. He's very polite. He's not like the typical college star who's going to go to the NBA. You know, he's not Blake Griffin. Like, you know who I am.
Exactly. And that's great as a human being, but maybe not great if you're trying to be a top 50 NBA player of all time. So I don't know what, again, I don't know what his goals are. I'm curious. There's kind of been like a media block on this so far with him and his family. No one's really gotten any quotes or talked to anybody. But I'm curious to see what he has to say down the road here about what he wants to do and what his goals are.
Absolutely. Go ahead.
And how much, as we started to touch on, of like a negative statement is this about Florida, though? I mean, like, we think it's a great decision for Kalaitis, but, I mean, at some sense, I'm not saying it absolutely means he was completely unhappy here. Maybe he's happy here and he really wants to go play for Greece. But if he's having, you know, the ball of his life, if he's really, really happy here at Florida, I don't think he's going to Greece.
This is horrible for Florida basketball. It really can't get any worse than this, honestly. And I threw out the question where if they miss the tournament again next year and one more guy transfers, do you start thinking about firing Donovan at that point? And McCall's response was, and I think this is probably the better route and what they would do, is they'll back him hard publicly through the end of his contract, which I think has 2 more years or 3 more years after this one. Back him hard publicly and like so that the team doesn't get whiff of them coming down on him like, hey, Billy's our guy. He's won 2 championships. He's fine. He'd be gated for the rest of his life if he wants to, you know, whatever they're going to say. But behind closed doors, when it's just Jeremy Foley and Billy Donovan, I think he needs to kick him in the pants a little bit and say, look, Billy, like, things are getting away from you here. You need to regain control of this program so you can get a contract extension. You know, I mean, I really think things are getting very bad. And a more telling statement is before this season, if Billy Donovan would have got fired, I would have been as shocked as I was about the Nick Kalaitis thing. I would have thought it was horrible. If you would have told me that after next year they don't miss a tournament and Billy Donovan gets fired, I'd kind of shrug my shoulders and say, okay. Like, that's how I feel about it anyway.
I'd still be surprised, but it's like, it's shocking to me the immense, like, mountains and valleys the Florida basketball program's going through.
Right.
It's like, they're the top, everybody wants to be Florida, and it was like, okay, you know he had a rebuild, like, you knew they came out of the 04s, everybody's given some grace period to Billy, but it's like, he took that grace period, and he's like, I'm just gonna keep on sucking, like, nobody's gonna want to play for me. Like, I mean, come on, I mean, this has been a joke. Like, he hasn't done one really good thing at Florida since the titles. I mean, they've had questionable lineups. They haven't had the right guys. They don't have a deep front court. He blames it all on Maurice Bates leaving early. Nick Kalaitis is leaving to go play in Greece. Alan Shane doesn't want to play here. Alex Tyus, he has to, like, possibly beg. We don't know what that situation was like.
Yeah.
Outsides wants to leave, comes back. Now your future is on Kenny Boynton, who is going to be really good or he's not going to be, but that's going to be a huge determining factor next season. and possibly Vernon Macklin. If Macklin is, you know, just okay, and Boynton's not, like, you know, the next coming of, you know, LeBron James or O.J. Mayo or something, I mean, I think I might project them to miss the tournament again.
O.J. Mayo a 1A to LeBron's 1, of course. But, yeah, this is real bad. I feel like the year after the two championships, I said, you know, to a lot of my friends and stuff, I thought Donovan had a really poor year as a coach, really down year for him just as a coach. Last year, I felt like he didn't do too bad of a job. There weren't too many things. I mean, not having guys back on the South Carolina play, I thought was horrible. Yeah. Calling out Nick Kolathis in public, there was no need for that. Mm-hmm. And maybe that leads to him going to Greece. Hey, I'm the man on the team, and I'm completely unselfish. I'm trying as hard as I can. And my coach rips me instead of the other 10 guys on the team who can't make a freaking layup. Yeah. Like, maybe that started to get to him, too. So I don't know. I'm just speculating. But I feel like Donovan had a little bit of a better year. And then next year, he was supposed to have all this talent now again, and Nick Kolathis was going to maybe be back. And, like, it could have been like, okay, like, let's get a barometer off of next year. Because you've kind of had excuses in the past 2 years. They played small. They had a big turnover. Such, you know, all that stuff. Now, I don't know. We're still in that, like, mode of there's turnover, there's rebuilding. How do we evaluate Donovan?
Right, it's like Billy got another excuse for next season. Exactly. It's like, yeah. Oh well, I thought Nick would be around, so now he's not. Yeah, but I mean, go ahead.
He's gonna do the same thing he did with Spates this year. Like, oh, I just got all these complimentary pieces that I would have put around Nick, and he, you know, turned tail and went to Greece. So.
But I mean, from last season, like their big one, a part of their issue was they couldn't just close games. Right. At some point, like, I know it's about your players and it's about your will to win. At some point, that's got to come down to coaching. At some point, you just have to teach your team. Like, put them in pressure situations somehow so that they succeed. I mean, like, I think it was 70 to 80% of their losses all within single digits.
Right. What I'd like to see them do next year, they're not going to have the talent, the high-end talent, to be real, real good probably in a conventional basketball sense, but they will be fairly deep. And I know a lot of writers have talked about this lately. Bill Simmons has, and some other guys who are real big into basketball statistics. If you take an average team with pretty good athletes, but average ability-wise and average skill-wise, and you go deep, you got a 10 to 12-man rotation, you should full-court press for the entire game and just swap guys in and out. Because really, how much does it matter if you get Irvin Walker for 30 minutes and Ray Shipman for 10, or both of them for 20? You know what I'm saying? Like, if you got the athletes, but you don't have guys who are going to win games just by them being on the court, go ahead and press the crap out of the other team and just see how it goes, because it's been kind of proven that's going to help you and that's going to get you a couple more wins, and I'd like to see them do something a little unconventional like that.
And I think they'll have a fairly athletic team to do it, because Kolathis, you know, maybe his one weakness was that he wasn't traditionally fast, he wasn't really that quick, but if you're throwing Walker, Boynton, Parsons, who's really long and can, you know, sort of mess things up down there, Tyus and Macklin, that's an athletic team. You can do a lot of different things with that team.
Right. I mean, I think what we saw sometimes, though, is that Billy D is, like, pretty stubborn sometimes, you know, like, he's not, you know, sometimes he'll have a system and he doesn't really like to change from it too much, you know, so I'd be curious, like, he might just say, well, I have a system, I'll take Kenny Boynton, I'll stick him in for Nick Kolathis, and now I have front court depth, you know, I have Tyus and Macklin and Warner down there, and Parsons maybe learns how to play the three again, and I'm just gonna make it work that way.
I want to ask, does he have front court depth? Like, we talk about all this front court depth he has. Like, what are we?
I mean, it's better than it's been the last couple of years. It's not like this sick, nasty front court depth, but I mean, it's way better than it's been. Dan Warner doesn't have to play the four anymore if he doesn't want to. I mean, you got Tyus, you got Macklin, and you got KG at this point. And if Vargas can come along a little bit, you're even going too deep at each position. So.
I just don't see that as, like, this really deep, talented... Because Vargas, I mean, he's a crapshoot at this point.
Right,
we don't know
what to expect. But you also have Eric Murphy coming in. So you
don't really
know what you're going to get out of the three of those guys. I think you pretty much know you're going to get solid players. They may not be superstars, but I think three, you can get dependable minutes out of Macklin, KG, and Tyus, at least.
I think that's what it's saying, even, about how not deep the Florida team used to be in the front court. Right. That now, you know, they have two legit front court starters, even, and I'm saying, oh, they're huge deep in the front court. You know, they got KG coming off the bench, and Tyus at the four, Macklin at the five, and I'm like, wow, they got all this depth.
And big men in college basketball aren't like big men in the NBA, let's be honest. You can be an effective big man at 6'8 or 6'9, whereas you can't in the NBA. And just a random thought about the state of Florida basketball. I mean, Dan Warner is going to be a 3-year starter here. And, like, let's be honest, that doesn't say a lot for a supposedly elite program. when Dan Werner starts for you for 3 years. Like, I'm sorry. That's just how I feel.
You think he'll start over Parsons' income next year?
I think so, yeah. I have no reason to think Dan Werner would not start next year. It's not like they have this influx of huge talent. Donovan loves him, so.
I mean, I think it's a bad sign for Florida. If Chandler Parsons, who's supposed to be really good, can't beat out Dan Werner to play the three, that's saying something terrible about Parsons and something bad. Like, Florida's not going to, I mean, winning the SEC is probably a joke at this point. With Werner at the three, like, Werner's great. He does all the small things. But, like, Parsons is, like, the prototypical three if he was just better. Like, if he could sink his shots, if he could drive, he's long arm. He's, like, you know, he's a little less athletic Corey Brewer, but he never has fulfilled that quite potential. And it's also a year where Florida, a little bit, is starting to ramp up that non-conference schedule. I think they got Xavier, NC State, and there's another couple games just starting to load up the non-conference schedule, but yet the team's not exactly ready to be better.
I mean, they may take a couple lumps there, but I make the argument, who cares? I make the same argument I always make. It doesn't hurt you if you lose those games. Mm-hmm. So I don't think that you should be wanting to get out of those games at this point now if you're Florida. But yeah, they could take a couple lumps in those games, but I mean, I don't think the lumps hurt you, so.
All right, so let's talk about the front court play a little bit more, since that is where they lost Calais. Oh, you'll be seeing Walker.
Backcourt.
Walker, Boynton, Shipman. What's this rotation going to look like?
Yeah, those are going to be your three main guards for sure. I mean, you're going to get Adam Allen back, who's more of a three, but could possibly play the two a little bit.
It's a big two, though, isn't it?
He's like 6'6 or so. So, yeah, he's big, but his skill set is such where I think he can play the two a little bit. But yeah, those are going to be your three main guards for sure. And I think that's not bad. I mean, Walker proved to be a reliable starter rotation player. I think Shipman's got tons of potential, and he's not going to screw anything up out there. You know, at the very least, he's going to play hard and play some great defense for you. And Boynton, you have to play. I mean, there's going to be a lot of pressure on him to kind of be the guy. So that's what their backcourt's going to look like. But on a side note, you know, when you guys did a podcast a little bit ago that I wasn't on, where right after Calipari went to Kentucky, and it was kind of like this big, like, coronation about, like, that's it, Kentucky's the king of the SEC again, Calipari. I kind of agree with that now. At the time, I don't, but, like, things look horrible for Florida. Like, I can't tell you, things just look so bad for Florida right now, and Kentucky just got John Wall now, and it's just looking better and better for Kentucky at this point. I know, Jody Meeks is going into the draft. He may still come back, but I think he'll probably go. He's just that kind of player, if you know what I mean.
He's going to get his.
Yeah, exactly. But, I mean, the talent that they have coming in, Patrick Patterson's coming back, so they could be real good. I think at this point it's going to be Kentucky and Tennessee in the SEC for the next 2-3 years.
Yeah, I'd say a key for Florida, if it really wanted to be good, and I'm not saying this could happen, and it's really nothing against Urban Walker, I just think it's going to just be tough for him to guard point guards in this league, like night in, night out, starting point guards. I mean, I think a big plus, if Ray Shipman, consistent offensive player, you know, maybe looking for a shot. We know he was a big scorer in high school. If he can kind of translate that offensive game to college, to the SEC, if you could start, I think your best starting five, and I know Boynton's more of a two, but if he could play the one, or if Shipman's not really a one, but if you could run Boynton, Shipman, Parsons, Tyus, and Macklin, I think that's your best starting five.
Yeah, I agree with you. But some of the stuff you said about, like, you know, scoring or guarding, I think Billy Donovan, if I were Billy Donovan, I would try to cultivate an attitude with this team. That would be my number one thing. Above, like, whatever plays we're going to run or how we're going to work a friggin' zone on defense, don't worry about that crap. Like, just cultivate an attitude where your guys are going to go out there and be nasty and compete and foul the crap out of people if you have to. Just be nasty out on the court and play like you give a crap. Like, I really feel like this team, like, there were so many times they just came out flat. They didn't really care. Whatever happens, happens. Put your guys in a press every now and again. Put them in man-to-man where they have to freaking compete instead of this zone crap all the time. It's one thing if the zone's working for you, then okay. But the zone clearly was not working for a big stretch last year. Just mix it up and let your guys compete and at least be, you know, have the competitiveness to go guard someone and try to lock them down. I mean, I don't know. I feel like Billy Donovan, over the years that I've been here and probably the years before that, he always plays kind of a full court trap where, like, he'll try to trap the guy coming in, and then if they don't get it, he pulls his guys back, which is cool. That's fine. That's putting a little bit of pressure. But I want to see a all-out full-court press release some of the time next year, because I think it can only help them. I think they do have athletes next year who can do stuff like this and just try to cultivate a hustle and a pride that they haven't had the last couple of years. And even if it's in just keeping games close that shouldn't be. I mean, to do something to make you guys feel like there's consequences to losing, I guess.
Yeah, I got to completely agree with all that, but I also agree with Phil, the starting lineup you gave. And did something we talked about a little bit a couple podcasts ago, a while back, that the team, the players didn't really have a role. Like, you felt like they were all just kind of out there playing basketball. Right. Nobody really had a set role. If you bring in Boynton as a scorer, the scorer, which Galathis never really was. Like, he was the scorer, but Parsons and Hodge would still jack up a bunch of shots. Shipman is like the defender, you know, Macklin is sort of like the low post, you know, beast or whatever, and Tyus, you know, maybe scoring down in the post, and Parsons just the swing man. I feel like this team has more of an identity than it would even with Galathis staying.
Yeah, I mean, if you're Billy Donovan, try to lay out a plan for what you want your guys to do. I mean, I'm going to tell Macklin, all I want from you is to protect the rim and rebound. That's it. Just block shots and rebound. If you score 8 points a game, I'm fine with that. But get 10 rebounds a game, block a couple shots, put a couple guys on their butts. Like, that's what I want from you.
Yeah.
Tyus, I need you to score down low for us. You've proven you can do it. You've proven you don't really want to bang down low too much. You like to score. Go ahead and score. That's what I want from you. You know, Parsons, I need you to develop a good three-point shot because you want to have – Florida likes to shoot the threes in the corners. Hodge has kind of been that guy in the past, but he's moving on. So maybe you put Irvin or Chandler in the corner shooting that three. I need you guys to develop that. Irv, I need you to learn to be a decision maker now. Push the ball up the court when you get a chance. Kenny, I need you to score off the ball. Let the guys know what you expect from them, because I think in the past, maybe they don't know exactly what their role is when they're out on the court.
Especially if they go up-tempo and Macklin can run the floor. I mean, I think they can be a really good up-tempo. They're running the press. They're running transition. You got athletes. I mean, you got Urban Walker. You got Kenny Boynton. But you know who really runs, who really likes to run the press, and who's his good buddy? Rick Pitino over at Louisville.
Right.
I mean, Pitino loves to press all the time. If, you know, Billy just pays a visit, hey, Rick, you know, like, give me some tips on this full court press. I kind of do a half of a full court press right now. You know, they just push up on the ball all the time, and they become a pressing team, as we say, and run guys in and out. I think they could be really successful. Yeah. Tyus running at the four could be great.
No, you're 100% right about Rick Pitino. That's a good point that I didn't really think of. Rick Pitino is a huge press guy. He took Providence to the Final Four, doing that with maybe a little bit of a overachieving team, rather. When he came into the NBA, he had a really crappy Celtics team that he ran the press with a bunch, which in the NBA is really unheard of. So I maybe he talks to Billy in the offseason and says, look, kid, you need to run the press if you want to win some games.
He's got his son on the bench now.
Great point. Look at Phil. He's bringing the heat. Yeah.
On his game.
So who knows? I mean, I don't think Billy Donovan's going to take cues from him. But it doesn't hurt. It's got somebody.
He's been around.
They're sharing his philosophies father doing for that. Sure. Yeah, absolutely.
Wasn't that Celtics team? Didn't he get Antoine Walker to run the press in the NBA? Like,
I think it may have been pre-Antoine Walker. I'm not 100% sure, honestly, but it was guys who weren't very good, if we're being honest.
It was a bad team.
Yeah, exactly.
Really, a team that should have underachieved that ended up overachieving.
Right. They probably won, you know, five to ten more games than they should have that year just because they were putting some pressure on the other team. So I think anything different that's going to switch up the whole attitude here among the players is a good attitude, because I really feel like the whole team morale at the end of last year and now in the offseason has been as bad as it can get. So.
And this certainly didn't help it. So I think we're ready to move on here. We're going to talk about the UF softball team. The Gators won both of their games here in the Super Regional in Gainesville this weekend against Cal. They won 2-0 and 2-1. Mostly on the behind the arm of Stacey Nelson, who pitched 12 innings, got 19 strikeouts. Really helped a weak-hitting team, an unusually weak-hitting team in Florida this weekend. Phil, you and I were there for both the rain delay Saturday night with our buddy Eric Collins from ESPN announcing the game. We were there for Sunday's early morning doubleheader.
First of all, it was quite ridiculous that anyone thought we were going to play any softball on Saturday. There was no point of that day that an 8 o'clock game.
Adam, we're going to run out.
There's no point that UF and Cal were going to step on the field Saturday night. Like, I could have canceled it at about 3 p.m., so that was a joke. Then we had to come back, you know, Sunday morning, see some great softball. Fans actually came out. I was a little bit surprised. There was pretty good turnout for Sunday morning, especially because they didn't announce the game times of Sunday morning's games when the game was canceled Saturday night, which I still won't ever understand. But anyway, I mean, yeah, UF, I mean, as I'm going to write in a column later this week, I'm still not sold on the bats. Stacey Nelson is pitching better, as good as she's ever pitched, as Coach Tim Walton said after this weekend's victories. Stephanie Brombacher, you know, I don't think we'll see a lot of her in Oklahoma City because she didn't really show us too much.
No, she's not going to be a factor in the postseason, I'm willing to say right now.
Yeah, I mean, they're clutch. They didn't really show me anything I didn't already know. They can win games. I feel like they didn't face that good of pitching to only get 7 hits and 4 runs. I feel like they're going to face better pitching than that almost every night out in Oklahoma City. Yeah, but, I mean, if Stacey Nelson can pitch as good as she did this week, it's really not going to matter.
Yeah. And they will face Arizona in the Women's College World Series Thursday, which Kyle and I will be driving out to starting Wednesday. Kyle, what are you expecting out of that game?
Out of that drive. Expecting a lot of barbecue and podcasts, I guess, on the way. I think, you know, UF should handle them pretty easily. I'm going to be honest, I don't know who Arizona's pitcher is offhand. I know last year was Taryn Mowat, and they lost her. But I know Arizona's got a good lineup. Brittany Lestraps hits leadoff for them. She's an excellent All-American player. I think they could possibly score a couple runs. I don't know. It's real hard to score any runs off Stacey Nelson. But, I mean, they could get one or two at least, you know. So, if you're going to, you know, Phil said he's still not sold on the bats. And if you're not going to be sold on one area, you'd rather be hitting than pitching, because softball's all about pitching this time of the year. You'll see, you know, we'll be there watching all the games. Phil will watch it on TV. So, it's only about pitching at this point. And, you know, you just can't go scoreless. If you score 0 runs, you won't win. But, like...
It is worth noting, though, you said, you know, maybe they'll scratch out a couple of runs. And the one run that was scored against Florida this weekend was not an earned run. It was because of a Megan Bush error, which is something we've talked about on previous podcasts. Like, defense could possibly be the one issue for UF going into this.
Absolutely. Because pitching is so magnified and your offense is not usually going to score more than 5 runs in a game, if you give teams extra outs and extra runs for, you know, just by making errors, that becomes huge. That was a big theme last year, too, while I was out there. It was just, like, the teams that couldn't catch the ball would lose. That's just how it works.
Yeah, and as we saw this weekend, Florida scored 1 run, I think, in the second game, or maybe it was the first game, where they just completely manufactured. Like, they had no confidence in, you know, being able to put up a run like they usually do.
No, yeah, that first game, I mean, as I said, I think the entire tone of that first game has completely changed if Pacuba doesn't knock a home run first batter for Florida in the bottom of the first. It's 1-0. Florida hasn't even taken any swings, and they didn't really do anything the rest of the game. The only other run they scored, bottom of the second, they get a walk. She steals second.
Yep.
She steals third, and then there's a wild pitch. She comes home.
Right.
I mean, she didn't really, you know, that was the absolute manufacturer run in a sense, because they couldn't get the bunt down. That was that play. Go ahead.
Are we concerned about their bats going into the postseason, Kyle?
I don't know how to feel about their hitting compared to last season, because they've had a couple players who I thought would have big years that have struggled a little bit, namely Allie Gardner and Tiffany DeFelice. But they've had a couple players who I didn't think would be nearly as good, like Kelsey Bruder, who put up unbelievable stats.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know. I think maybe it's about a wash where they were last year hitting-wise. If Kim can come back and be effective, be kind of, you know, 80 to 90% of what she usually is, then that's going to be absolutely huge for them. I think that may be the X factor for them, honestly.
Yeah.
But Asia, who, you know, after watching her for half a season last year, I said, this girl's amazing. She can do everything. She might go down as the best player, position player in program history by the time she leaves after 4 years. So, I mean, she's really played great, and maybe she can set the tone for them.
Right, and I'd say, but if you don't have any of those X factors, we don't have Kim stepping up, Asia doing anything, even on top of what she's doing. When you said that they were just a wash with last year, I mean, I'm not trying to be, you know, ironic here, but they just didn't get it done last year, you know? I mean,
that's just hitting, though. But, like, the one thing that makes college softball completely different from college baseball is that there's a constant in the circle every single day, and that's Stacey Nelson for the Gators, and she's better than she was last year. She's the best she's ever been.
Yeah.
And it's really going to be hard for anyone to score off her, being honest. I mean, it's, like I said, it's just all about pitching at this point. She could throw all shutouts out there, and it wouldn't completely surprise me. Like, obviously that's a ridiculous feat, but I'm not going to say she can't do it. Like, she's absolutely incredible. She shut out some really good teams in Oklahoma City last year. And so if the offense can just be good enough, I mean, they have a real chance to win a championship, obviously.
Yeah, and the one game they lost last year was a 9-inning. She gave up 1 run. I mean, it's ridiculous. She has the potential to do that, to, you know, shut out a bunch of opponents. But I want to go back to the X factors you mentioned. Tiffany DeFelice especially, she looked hurt at the end of the second game against Cal. She was holding that same wrist that she hurt last year in the World Series, that she's been troubled by a little bit this year, so I don't know in terms of what she's going to be able to do, if she's going to be able to step up and be that X factor.
Who, just offhand, thoughts on who steps in if she can't go in the lineup? I know she was playing mostly designated player at the end of the season.
I think you'll see Michelle Moultrie, potentially maybe play center and let Kim Wallazonia be the DP, or, you know, switch that up either way. You know, something that way I think is most likely what you'll see. Maybe even Alicia Cisco, a slap hitter, because slap hitters become really effective in the World Series.
Yeah, I don't think that's even a bad move, replacing Moultrie with TD, just because TD is kind of a shadow of what she was last year. It seems like the wrist injury has really taken away a lot of her power. She's kind of been a singles hitter, and like Walton said some nonsense about how she's such a good bunter and we want to use her to bunt. Like, this girl was a friggin' like threat last year at the plate, and you're using her to bunt, and she's not even all that fast. You're using her to move runners over.
She's a sack bunter.
You can get Moultrie or Kim in there who are gonna bunt and possibly get hits for you know, by bunting the ball. So I feel like it's not that bad. The more speed you can have out there, maybe the better, because you're going to have to manufacture some more runs. But Francesca's going to hit a few home runs, I guarantee you that. Asia may get one. Corey Brooks will hit a couple home runs. Allie Gardner is capable of hitting a couple doubles, maybe
Kelsey,
a home run.
Kelsey, Megan.
Like, they have power hitters, so if you can get some speed in that lineup too, that are going to annoy the pitchers, didn't get on base and put pressure on the defense. You know, Megan Bush is probably going to strike out 100 times in Oklahoma City. I'm sorry, Megan, if you're listening to this. Please prove me wrong. But, like, she really had an awful World Series last year against really good pitching. I don't think she had a hit the whole time, or she had one hit.
Wow.
But, I mean, she's going to need to maybe shorten up her swing. You know, you can't just get up there and strike out every time. Put the ball in play. Put some pressure on the defense at least.
The other trend that I noticed, we can argue maybe if this is a real trend or if it's just starting, is Stacey almost seems to be more striking out more batters this time around. I mean, because I was under the impression she was never a huge strikeout pitcher. I mean, obviously, she's a really dominant pitcher, and she would strike people out, but she would also, like, have a lot of help from her defense. But now, I mean, she struck out. It seems like she was mowing everyone down on Sunday. And that can only, you know, bode better even for the Gators, because they don't even have to depend as much on the defense that's, you know, causing errors.
Yeah, she struck out 13 in the first game where she pitched the whole thing, and then 6, I believe, where she only pitched 5 innings. So, yeah, she's definitely mowing them down here at the last part of the season. When she is sort of known for, you know, just keeping them off the board more than anything, you know, pitching low, not giving up home runs, not giving up the big play.
Yeah, her strikeout numbers, like strikeout per Ks per 7, it would be for softball. It's up from last year for sure. I think she was about a 1 strikeout per inning pitcher last year, and she's a little bit more than that this year. She's probably 1.5 strikeouts an inning.
That's
a pretty big jump, honestly. So, I mean, she's not Danielle Laurie out there who strikes out, you know, almost two batters in an inning or whatever it is. But she's definitely struck out more batters than she has in the past, and yeah, that can only help them, really.
She's not that Spalding girl from North Carolina who strikes out like 3
for
an inning.
Yeah, strikes out 3 in an inning but gives up 2 runs. Yeah. So, I don't know. But yeah, Stacey's been great, and to have an ERA of 0.41 or whatever crazy number it is right now, it's like she's really just in a zone, and they'll probably ride her all the way to a championship. I expect them to. I predicted last week that they would go undefeated through regionals, super regionals, and the World Series. I'm halfway there, I guess, in that prediction. So,
and we can say whatever we want to about, you know, how much they struggled this weekend, but they still haven't lost like they did last year in the regionals. So
last year they dropped a game to UCF. So 2 runs are better than no runs. I know that's really obvious and John Madden-like, but if they really just can't have these extra inning games where they're scoreless.
Which, you know, if they continue to go undefeated, would bring them under the 5 wins, as I predicted prior to the season. But the question I was going to bring up and raise here, who poses the biggest threat to UF? Because we all, you know, in some sense expect UF to run through this tournament. Maybe not run through it, but, you know, win the championship. Who's the biggest threat?
I'm going to take the easy pick in this one. It's the team that's already beat them, Washington, because as Kyle mentioned already, they have that pitcher, Danielle Laurie, who can just strike out everybody. I think UF got 1 or 2 hits against them earlier this year. Danielle Laurie is ridiculous. She's the other finalist for Player of the Year with Stacey. She's played for the Canadian national team. That team is, you know, again, it's what Laurie can do is what that team will do.
I kind of think Washington's the only team that can beat them. I think Washington could beat them twice, possibly, though, also. Mm-hmm. So I'm not saying it's a lock that they win, necessarily. I just feel like Laurie is the only, like, friggin' stud pitcher out there. Last year, it was a different All-American every game. I'm dead serious. Like, pitching-wise, it was like, okay, face this All-American pitcher. Now he faced this All-American pitcher. Now into this All-American pitcher. It was a joke. And they did beat Tincher last year, which was pretty impressive. But it was just like, okay, now you got Megan Gibson for Texas A&M. Now you got Angelica Seldon for UCLA. Now you get Taryn Mowat for Arizona. Like, it was absolutely ridiculous, like, all the different amazing pitchers there were. Last year, the Lafayette pitcher was really good as well. I think, you know, it's a little bit of a weaker field at the bottom this year. If you draw a Missouri or a Michigan, I feel like that could be a romp, I don't know, for U.S.
Missouri, absolutely.
Yeah, so I don't know. I think they'll do just fine out there.
I just thought of another thing, though. Another team that's in their side of the bracket is Alabama, who did beat them as well earlier this year. Granted, that game, you know, I would argue the officiating was rough. UF was, you know, one swing away from winning that thing as well. But, I mean, Alabama is familiar with this team, kind of knows what it takes to beat them.
I'll throw that. I'll concede Alabama could possibly beat them. However, I think UF's in Kelsey Dunn's head a little bit. I know she threw a couple no-hitters against whatever joke team somehow made Super Regionals. Jacksonville State. But UF's had a lot of success against Kelsey Dunn. They did a grand slam off her in every game, it seems like. So, I don't know. I don't, like, Kelsey Dunn hasn't really proved she can just shut down that lineup.
Yeah, they put up 8 runs against her in the SEC tournament, and they mercy ruled them twice, or, you know, destroyed them twice earlier this season. They did get that one that was 6-4, I believe, at home in Gainesville, the game, you know, the third game of that series. So,
they,
I don't necessarily know.
They lost 6-4?
Yeah.
So, they even scored 4
They scored
runs.
4, either way. Yeah. It was just a fluke,
the 6 runs are fluke.
And it was 2 errors, I believe, in that game as well. One by Corey Brooks, one by Megan Bush. So, again, all about the defense, all about that, and see if they can get out of that side of the bracket. The other teams in that side, I believe, Arizona, Georgia, Washington, Missouri, and Arizona State are on the other side. So they'll be Arizona, Michigan, Alabama, and UF.
Yeah, and I just don't, like, I don't see a whole lot of teams in the field that can beat them. I mean, they smoked the crap out of Georgia in the regular season. Georgia's a joke for them. Like, they'll just run through them.
And Michigan.
It's like a 3-team race. Really, you could just get rid of the rest of the field, give UF a bye, have Washington, Alabama play a play-in into the championship, and just take it from there.
All right, and do you think either of those teams can beat them twice? Maybe.
Yeah, I think Washington can beat them twice. I don't think they will. I'm betting on UF for sure, but I think it's not out of the realm of possibility for Washington to beat them twice.
Phil, you want to throw your ring in the hat? Your hat in the ring there? Make a prediction? No? Phil is deathly ill. I'm worried for Phil right now. We may have to get out of this room. It's like 120 degrees in here, and Phil's flu-like symptoms are really flaring.
Are you okay, honestly? You look like death right now.
I'm doing my best.
It's a softball talk, isn't it?
No, just this office is making me ill. Yeah, I mean, I think UF, as I was listening to all this discussion, I don't think Alabama can beat them twice for sure, as we've seen over multiple seasons now. I think Washington poses the biggest threat, but I think in some sense, if there's ever, I think softball is more of a game where it's not as mental as maybe some other sports, but I mean, you know, this team came back, they didn't win last year, they really want to win this year, they already lost to this pitcher already this year. I mean, if you're ever going to get jacked up for a game, and I'm sure these girls get jacked up for every game, it's the Women's College World Series, but I mean, I would have to imagine Washington, if they meet them in the championship best of 3 series, I would expect that to go 3 games, and I can't imagine picking against UF in game 3.
And the pressure, Jesus, how old am I, 13? That was unbelievable. Can I play?
It's a disaster.
It's deteriorating here. All right, let's regroup. I'll try to have a normal voice, and Bill try to control whatever allergies he's having over there.
It's all breathe.
Take a break.
All right, let's go.
The pressure is absolutely on for this team. I mean, last year, they kind of got a mulligan. They were inexperienced. They weren't predicted to be there at the beginning of the year. Worked their way into a number one seed. They were only losing one player for this year. So they lost. Okay, no big deal. Now, if you lose this year, you lose a bunch of seniors who have been big-time players for this program. You lose Stacey Nelson. You lose Allie Gardner. You lose Kim Wallazonia. You lose some players who, Christina Hilbert, who are very hard to replace. This is going to be an ordeal for them to get back to where they were next year.
Yeah.
They're a completely different team, essentially. So, I mean, I think this is it. Their window's closing. They need to win this year.
Absolutely. And while I think this team may have been, you know, just as talented, maybe, you know, a little less talented last year, this team knows kind of how to handle it. I mean, you know, last year was the first time. It was sort of a new thing for them. This team, like, you know, they were excited to get to the World Series or whatever, but it's like Stacey said after the game, like, 2 hours after the game, that's when, like, the excitement period for winning the Super Regional ends.
Yeah, my interesting thought here is, how does Tim Walton factor into this? You know, having gone through the College World Series this year, supposedly he learned.
Did Tim Walton ask you to ask this question?
I'm sorry. He coached a team through the Women's College World Series last year. He learned how to make a deeper team possibly this year. You know,
he's obviously learned, you know, Stephanie Braunbacher, if we see her, is going to leave after the first hit she gives up.
Yeah.
But, I mean, as a coaching matchup, is Tim Walton a plus for Florida, just a push, or is he a negative?
As much as I mock you for asking that question, because it seems like something Coach Walton would talk about, he does. He actually has prepared this team a little bit better as the year's gone along. He's provided a lot more depth. He's got a lot more players in, whereas last year I don't think he would have played. So, like, he played Lauren Heil in the field at the end of the regional championship. She's a freshman. She's probably not going to see a lot of time in the World Series. But worst case scenario, you know, somebody gets hurt, she will see time, and now she's ready. And that's, you know, that's indicative of what he's done all season for the team in terms of depth. All
right, two thoughts on this subject. One, last year they depended very heavily on a big group of freshmen. And all those freshmen are sophomores now. And I think he does know his team better this year, just because he's seen them, those freshmen from last year play 2 years now instead of one. You know what you're getting out of them. And he's been forced to put other people in the lineup because of the injuries that they've had this year that they didn't have last year.
Mm-hmm.
It's probably a good thing for them, because I've said before, when TD went down last year in Oklahoma City with the wrist injury, he didn't know who his next best hitter was. He didn't know if it was Kelsey Bruder. He didn't know if it was Christine Preeby. He didn't know if it was Lynette Franklin. He didn't know who to put in at that point. I think this year he has a good idea of who his depth is at the 10, 11, 12 spots instead of just 7 through 9 at the bottom there.
Absolutely.
So that's thought one. Thought two, if you can just take the softball and put it in your best pitcher's hand every day, that's all you need to do as a coach, really. I mean, let's be real here. Don't run your team into outs. Don't make stupid bunt calls when you shouldn't. What do you really have to do?
Yeah.
Just give the ball to Stacey Nelson and say, win me a friggin' championship. I mean, that's all it comes down to. He's done all the work getting the players to come play here. Go hit home runs and strike out batters at this point.
At this point, the only thing I think I'd be worried about him doing in terms of the lineup is outthinking himself a little bit. You know, maybe playing some players he shouldn't, trying to push Kim too hard, you know, when he could just trust Moultrie, he could just trust Cisco, and, you know, maybe putting Defelice in there, having her sack a bun a little too much, not just letting her be her. I don't know. That's
yeah.
the only thing I could think of.
Yeah, don't overcoach, I think. Just let your players go out there and just do what they know how to.
All right, and I think we're ready to move on here before Phil leaves us. We're going to move on to talk about the UF baseball team. The Gators went 1-2 in the SEC tournament in Hoover, Alabama. They lost both of their games to Arkansas, but they will return to Gainesville. They're going to host an NCAA regional here in Gainesville. They're the number 8 national seed, which means that if they advance from that, they'll also host the Super Regional. But Kyle, let's first talk about the SEC tournament. What went wrong for them there?
Well, they had to play Arkansas twice. Mostly that's what went wrong for them. And the people who schedule the SEC tournament don't know what they're doing at all. Because it works like this. You play Arkansas in the first round, you lose. So you play the other grouping. The other grouping's losers. There's two teams, Ole Miss and
Georgia,
played the first round. So they draw Ole Miss. That's the first elimination game in the loser's bracket. They beat Ole Miss. Good job, UF. Pat on the back, a little regrouping session. I write an article about how the national seed hopes are still intact. Who do they draw? Oh, they draw Arkansas again, who loses to Georgia. Unbelievable. They should have them play the other side of the bracket at that point, so that, you know, it's an SEC tournament and not a weekend series with the Razorbacks. Like, I can't possibly explain why it's set up that way. You'll see in Oklahoma, same format, 18 tournament,
yeah.
and it'll flip where
yeah.
it should flip, so you don't play the same team twice in 3 games. What are they thinking? So, I don't understand that. Also, Golden Flake potato chips, maybe they were eating a couple of those, if you guys don't know what that is. It's the official snack of the SEC.
I hear it's the best around.
It's the worst potato chip I've ever tasted in my entire life. I had no idea what it was until I got out there. But it's all over that tournament, and I think they just maybe digested a few too many Golden Flakes. That's my personal theory.
I was angry about two things here, neither of which have to do with the UF baseball team.
Yeah, so back to their actual team. They can't pitch at all, and they can only field slightly above an average, able-bodied human being. I don't know. Their defense was pretty pathetic in a lot of those games, and their pitching in the second game they lost to Arkansas, no starter went more than, I believe it was 2 1/3 innings for them. Or no starter, no pitcher that pitched in that game went more than 2 1/3 innings, which is remarkable. I don't know how you do that in an elimination game. Things are getting bad fast on this podcast.
The sands are slipping from the Coke hourglass.
So that's their main problem. Their hitting's fine. Their lineups, they got threats up and down the lineup. You know, I mean, they're at least an above average team every time, you know, swinging the bat. But pitching and defense, the two staples of baseball, are really letting him down right now.
Yeah, let me remind you that you just described a team that earned the number 8 national seed.
Yeah.
Like, all those things that you just cut them up for, they're still going to host a regional, host a super regional, supposed to be the number 8 team in baseball.
Right. Well, here's the thing. I just feel like that's college baseball for you. Like, the pitching's always inconsistent. It's the main difference. You don't know what you're going to get from a game-to-game basis from any of these teams. You look at Fresno State, who had 20 losses, you know, and went to the World Series, or 25 losses, whatever it was. So, I just don't, like, softball, it's like, okay, you're going to get a good performance out of our pitcher every day. You know that. You have no idea what you're going to get in baseball, and that's why it's such a crapshoot comparatively. And I wouldn't be surprised to see them lose a regional. Well, I wouldn't be surprised to see them make it to Omaha. Everything's in play here, as far as I'm concerned, as it was in the SEC tournament for me.
Well, now we see they're ready to host a regional this weekend. They got Bethune-Cookman, Jacksonville, and Miami coming to town. Obviously, the biggest threat there is going to be the Hurricanes, who swept the Gators in Gainesville in 3 games in the earlier part of the season.
And they didn't just sweep them. They embarrassed them. Right. Like, it was bad. It was really bad.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, possibly some of the teams have changed a little bit. Some of the freshmen have matured, you know, as the saying goes, you're not a freshman anymore.
Someone said that in the press conference at SEC tournament. This kid, Zach Cox, on Arkansas, who absolutely murdered them in the second game. Like a Ruthian performance. He hits one off the top of the scoreboard, takes out a light, Roy Hobbs style, and then throws a perfect 2 innings to close the game. Unbelievable. And he was a freshman, and some dude asked him a question. There's a bunch of freshmen in the lineup. You're a freshman. How did that work out for you? And he's like, well, we're not freshmen anymore. And I told the guys, we're not freshmen anymore. You're still a freshman. How many credits do you have, Zach Cox? Answer that question for me. Once you have the requisite amount of credits, you can make a statement like that. Until then, you're still a freshman to my knowledge.
No promises that I won't ask that question in Oklahoma City. Hey, how many credit hours do you have? Prove to me you're not a freshman. You got a transcript?
Should have been that guy's follow-up question, obviously. Not doing his job as a reporter.
Yeah, as you said, the media wasn't quite up to par there in Hoover.
I mean, I wasn't impressed with the question asking. I don't want to bash the media. I can't even speak on this podcast, so Lord knows what they're saying about me.
I mean, I may not make it to the next podcast, so anything's up for grabs right now. But handicap the Gators' chances this weekend for making it on to the Super Regional.
65%. 60%.
That high, huh? Even with the Hurricanes?
They're the favorites. I mean, right?
I mean, they're at home, but yeah. I mean, Miami couldn't have almost beaten them any worse.
I'm going to say there's an 100% chance Bethune-Cookman and Jacksonville don't make it out of the region, right? We all agree on that?
Yeah.
So I'm still saying Florida's the favorite over Miami. They've played better than they have at the beginning of the season. And they have Stephen Locke now, who's their number one pitcher at this point in time. And he wasn't with them for the Miami series to start with. He didn't pitch well in his SEC tournament start, but, I mean, he's been reliable for them.
They still have the same weaknesses, though, don't they? Like, their pitching is like what we saw from the Rays tonight, where, you know, you can't get a pitcher to, you know, you clear out the whole bullpen every game just because you can't get a guy to stay in there for more than an inning.
FML.
Jeez. I think the bigger problem, the pitching's real bad. The bigger problem is the defense. Yeah, just catch the ball. They catch the ball and they throw the ball. They will have a much better chance of winning these games.
It's college baseball, Kyle. You can't always catch the ball.
No, I don't know for sure. It's not like I'm the college baseball beat writer here or anything, but I would say there are probably some pretty good defensive teams out there. Yeah. And UF is just not one of them. Yeah. It's not impossible to be good defensively at the college level. I think the pitching's rough, but just catch the friggin' ball. Just catch the ball and make routine plays, and you'll win games.
I was being facetious with the college baseball thing.
You think by this point in the season,
I feel stupid.
It's not like guys are stepping into new positions. It's like the beginning of the season. They haven't had much practice. They've had a whole season there. They committed 7 errors in 3 games at the SEC tournament. 7 errors?
I'm not gonna lie.
I would do better than that, possibly, if I went out of diamond.
That's like not even that bad for them. 7 errors in 3 games? It could get worse.
I mean, Mike Moody might have 7 errors in 3 games at this pace.
I think they made 4 in one of the games.
Yeah, the third game.
And, like, that's, like, a bad game for them. 2 errors in 1 game, it's like, well, they may be able to overcome that. It's really, their defense is really bad. In particular, their infield defense.
But it's ridiculous, like, even when they have the opportunities, and they had plenty in that third game. I saw a little bit of it on TV. Like, an Arkansas outfielder just whiffed on a ground ball, like, didn't get his glove down on the ground, and they scored 2 runs off of that play or something like that. And they can't do, like, how many runs did they score in that game?
The Gators scored 7 runs, five of them were unearned. Yeah. So they actually scored more unearned runs than the Razorbacks, who scored three unearned runs. So yeah, they had Arkansas tried to lose the game just as much as the Gators did. They just had Zach Cox. I mean,
who won the game for them?
Right.
All right, I think we're ready to move on here into our last segment, our weekly awards. All right, we're gonna start off with our Gator guarantees, where we predict something that will happen in the world of UF sports in the following week. But first, I guess let's start out with how we did last week. Mike McCall picked that the UF baseball team would go 2-0 in the SEC tournament. And just since mine's related, I'm going to say that I picked that they would go to the SEC championship and lose. We were both wrong. UF managed to not do well and still find a way to screw both of us over in our guarantees. So,
two writers, one tournament, zero right answers. Good work, boys.
Yeah, absolutely. And Kyle, you said that the UF softball team would win out for the rest of the season. You're right so far. You've still obviously got to...
I'm halfway there. Give it some time to develop, just like the basketball guarantees. Give it some time to develop.
Yeah, you still got a hill to climb here, but all right, go ahead and hit us with yours for this week.
All right, well, since I used up my softball prediction last week, I can't really make a World Series prediction here. Yeah. So I'm going to make a baseball prediction. And that prediction is Anthony DeSclafani will start against Miami for them because I think he's been their best pitcher. So they'll either use Locke or insert third starter here against Bethune-Cookman on Friday. I'm not really sure who they'll throw. Yeah. But more importantly, I'm going to guarantee that they get out of the regional. I think, you know, I was a little bit hard on them, but it's just college baseball that I'm really hard on as a whole. So I say they get out of the tournament.
Right,
out of the regional.
First off, mini discussion. Wouldn't it be the best idea to put your third best starter or so in the first game against Bethune-Cookman, save your number one for a team better than Bethune-Cookman? Am I crazy to think that?
Are you trying
for baseball?
Do you know what I said?
Yeah, I'm agreeing with you. Oh, but yeah, I mean, yeah. Like, why put Stephen Locke, their number one, out there Friday night? Why not put two, three guys?
Well, I mean, I think I'm saying that Locke's going to be their two guy at this point,
okay.
So maybe you lead with him. I'm saying Anthony DeSclafani's been their best guy.
So
he'll throw against Miami, not Stephen Locke. That's pretty much what I was saying there.
Okay. Well, I'm raising the Gator guarantee up one a little more notch here. I say UF sweeps the regional and win three games and move on the next weekend.
Wow. Crazy talk, though.
And they've got
head cold.
they're gonna come out fighting. They're at home. The fences are a little bit closer again this weekend, and they'll take down the Hurricanes.
Preston Tucker hits seven home runs.
All right, and I'm gonna finish it out with another baseball guarantee. I'm gonna say that they won't make it out of the regional. So either way, Cal, like, you or I have to be right this time.
Yeah.
I'm not gonna pull me and McCall from last week. One of us has to be right.
One of us has to be right, and Phil could be more right than me.
I mean, I'm never wrong. So count that one. Book it. UF sweep in the regional this weekend.
Book it. The same term you used to say that Cornelius Ingram would play in the national championship game.
He
which
should have played.
Did he, though, Phil?
I couldn't tell. Maybe he got in for the deal down.
Kyle, back me up.
I don't believe Cornelius Ingram played in the national championship game.
I don't think
he prayed either.
I don't think he played. So Phil's, you know, assumption that he's always right, wrong. So once again,
ladies say differently. Let's roll. Keep it real.
Unbelievable. All right, we're going to move on. We're going to go with our Reggie Nelson and Kyle... Reggie Nelson Awards for Excellence in the Field of Sport and Kyle Jackson Bad Angles of the Week. Let's start off with Phil this time. Phil, give me your Reggie and then your Kyle.
Oh, without a doubt, I think this has to go to UF softball pitcher Stacey Nelson. A dominant performance this weekend that I haven't seen. I mean, she comes out, pitches game one, 13 strikeouts. Then she comes into game two, you know, tying runner on second base, no out. She just mows him down. She gets a momentum-killing double play, as Mr. Berry put in today's paper.
Yeah. I just want to say that you didn't finish that in all your years of following college softball and all your...
I don't think that's what I said, man. I haven't followed softball for years. I don't claim to.
It gives you Kyle. Phil's 10% right now. It gives you Kyle.
I mean, I'm falling even beneath that. The Kyle Jackson goes for whatever official, I don't know if it's UF, NCAA, ESPN, whoever thought that we were going to get UF, Cal, next on Saturday night and thinks that we were ever going to play softball on Saturday night when there was like an 80% chance of rain from 2 p.m. to 11 p.m. I mean, that was a joke. Should have canceled the game on Friday night. They get my huge Kyle Jackson award. They had a freaking... a full crowd that has sit around for like an hour, and then they tell us at 7:50 that we're only 20 minutes away from playing softball.
Yeah.
I could bet you all the money in the lottery that we weren't going to play softball that night.
McCall and I, by the way, have been buying a ton of Powerball tickets lately.
Let me know if you hit.
Up. I will.
Maybe I'll get a real office in this place. Some AC.
Wow. All right, Kyle.
Okay, I'm going to do a joint Reggie award. I was hard on the baseball team a little bit, but they get one of my Reggies for getting a national seed. When we sat around this very table and talked about the preseason predictions for the team, none of us thought they would be this good. Mm-hmm. I think Bobby had them getting to a super regional, and we all kind of told him he was crazy. So they really had a great season. Kevin O'Sullivan should really be proud of what he did with the team this year. My other Reggie is going to go to the Women's College World Series as an event. It's really great to cover. It's great to watch. The atmosphere is awesome. I covered it last year, and I wouldn't drive 18 hours each way out there if I didn't really enjoy the event. It's great. I like everything about it pretty much. The meals are a little weak. But besides that, it's all about food for me on this podcast. But besides that, it's really great. I think people really get into it who aren't softball fans watching it on ESPN and stuff. So that's my other Reggie.
All right, I'm going to change my Kyle just because of what you said right there. My Kyle originally was going to go to USF and UConn for having a dance-off during a rain delay at the Big East Championship. They were doing, like, the Soulja Boy and the Macarena.
Sounds like a great idea. I'm sorry I missed it.
Just generally making people look bad. You know, just look. It was terrible.
I knew that without asking.
Jeez. I'm going to change my Kyle Jackson to journal media, to sports reporters, because all I hear about, it seems like in every event I go to, is, oh man, you remember the meal we got at that place? Oh yeah, it was great. So how was covering it? I don't really remember, but the steak was great. That is my one promise. I never want to become one of the reporters who only talks about the meal in an event.
Well, I'm slowly becoming that.
I'm sad to see it, but at least like we're excited about chicken and waffles on the way to Atlanta. That's not meal. That's not food.
The road to Oklahoma City is paved with incredible eating, but once you get there, it's questionable.
I'd say that's why I'm getting out of this business. So.
Yeah, I mean, that's actually a serious thing. That's something I've complained about in here. Like, people, like, reporters who don't get excited, you know, enjoy what they're watching out there on the field. Like, you know, you're seeing some stuff that you'll never get to see again, and all you're talking about is the free food that's in the press box lobby. I don't know, that's my, on my soapbox, I'm going to step
you,
down.
I'm with you.
All right, and I'm going to give my Reggie Nelson Award to some people on the UF track team. Coach Mike Holloway, runner Calvin Smith, and runner Genevieve Lacaz recently received awards this week. That was Coach Mike Holloway's first SEC Outdoor Coach of the Year. Huge for him. He's really built up a pretty strong team. The women's team obviously won the SEC Outdoor. Men's team, I believe, came in second.
Yeah, I think all this, I mean, just a national title. I mean, it's not that it's even expected. I mean, the men's team was number one, but track and field's kind of a sport that it's really kind of inconsistent. Like, you got to get good points from everyone to win a title. But, I mean, I feel like there's big track teams at the top, Arkansas, that runs off titles. Pretty sure UF never has had a national title. I think Mike Holloway is really close to getting there.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's why I'm going to give him my Reggie Nelson Award. I think are we ready to wrap the show up here?
I didn't give my Kyle yet.
I interrupted you.
Yeah, well, it's okay. I gave a double Reggie, so that probably threw us off. That's okay, because I got such a big rant coming that it needs to stand alone as the show goes out.
Sit back.
All right.
Go ahead, Kyle.
Of all the things that bother me, really, Magic fans have just exceeded anything that has ticked me off in the last week or so. I can't listen to your whining anymore. Three quarters of you can't name a Magic player from more than 2 years ago. You're all bandwagon fans for the most part. I have a couple friends who are an exception. Adam's a Magic fan. He's always been a Magic fan. He's a pretty rational human being for the most part. But everybody else out there who seems to love the Magic now, I have 100 Facebook statuses, go Magic, go Magic, oh, Dwight's the best.
Believes in Magic.
Yeah, well, I believe in Magic. Do you believe in Magic? I can't take it anymore. Just shut up. And more importantly, if you're going to root for your Magic and you don't know what you're watching because you never watched the NBA ever, shut your mouth with your opinions about the officiating and all this nonsense about LeBron and how, oh, the NBA has made up their mind. It's going to be a LeBron-Kobe finals. That's going to be that. If the NBA made up its mind, it's going to be a LeBron-Kobe finals, and the officials are throwing the games for them, explain to me how the Magic were a miracle LeBron last-second shot away from being up 2-0 on the road. Then those officials are so incompetent they can't even throw games at that point. The game 2 discrepancy for free throws was 1. The Cavs took one more free throw, and the Magic committed one more foul. That's it. I wouldn't call that a huge discrepancy.
Absolutely.
In game 3 in Orlando, the Magic set a playoff record, NBA playoff record. I don't know how long the NBA's been around, but it's for a long time, guys. And they set a playoff record for free throw attempts in one game. Any freaking post up to Dwight Howard in that game was an automatic foul every single time. And there was horrible fouls the other way too. The phantom calling LeBron with Dwight Howard. I get it, guys. LeBron gets some fouls he shouldn't get, but you got 15 more free throws than the Cavs, And all I hear the next day is whining about how LeBron gets every foul call. You guys are sickening, honestly. I can't listen to it anymore. Either just watch the games, put Go Magic in your status, and don't give any stupid opinions about what's going on, or actually watch the team all year, maybe for 2 years when they're not threatening to win a championship, and form your opinions then. Because really, I can't listen to it anymore. I can't listen to the foul call gripes. The officiating is horrible. It is horrible on both sides. And don't bother me anymore.
I want to clap right now. That was meaningful. That was deep.
But
I'm
waiting to get that off your chest.
I'm really pissed about everything.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree with you in both senses. Like you said, I am a Magic fan, but I am also a fan of basketball. And as a fan of basketball, I've seen the officiating is, you know, universally terrible.
Horrible
right now.
For everyone.
Yeah, absolutely. But Magic fans, like you said, you know, they never really follow. All they know is their team. So, of course, you know, they see something not go their way, you know, they're going to complain about it. And, you know, like you said, the Magic shot 51 free throws in a game.
What is there to cry about the officiating when you shot 51 free throws? I could go into a separate gripe about how there were 86 free throws combined in that game. I won't do that. I'll spare everybody out there. But I really just can't take anyone. I don't know what to do. Like, I'm a Heat fan, so I don't have a horse in this race, so to speak. I predicted preseason, a Lakers-Cavs finals, so I want to be right, obviously. And I am cheering for the Cavs instead of the whiny-ass Magic, no offense. But it's like the fans, like, in the series prior, Dwight Howard throws a vicious elbow that he ends up being suspended for. But in the time, there was no foul call on the play. There was no flagrant, no nothing. The calls have gone... No, nothing! But the calls have gone both ways. Let's just all hate on the officials together.
Absolutely.
Come on, we can do it. Let's channel our energy, Magic, Cavs, Lakers, Nuggets fans alike, Heat fans who have been bouncing in the playoffs. Let's just channel our energy and hate on the officials instead of LeBron James and the NBA fix that's allegedly going on right
Absolutely.
Now.
I'm sorry, my energy all channeling to the Rays bullpen who decided to give up 7 runs in the bottom of the ninth to send me into whatever swine flu-like sickness I have right now.
That's not a bad point. Phil, you know, you probably don't care about the NBA because at one point I thought you were a Magic fan, and then the other night we're watching the game and you're, go Cavs! Go Cavs!
I never claimed to be a Magic fan.
I can't understand. Then you grew up in the same place I did.
I never claimed the fan, man.
Penny
Hardaway's fan.
Penny Hardaway, Shaq, that never...
I had the poster when I was like 7.
I mean, the bandwagon's full anyway, so if you wanted to jump on at this point,
I wouldn't want on this bandwagon. This bandwagon's worse, almost as bad as the Rays bandwagon last year.
This is worse for me. At least Rays... Here's why it's worse. The Rays had probably more bandwagon fans, and maybe people who knew even less.
Yeah.
They didn't
but
say
their
anything.
Attitude, they were just so happy to be there. They
Absolutely.
Were just so happy. Oh, how long can the Rays take this magical journey? Like, let's all just hold hands and just be joyous at what's going on in front of us. The Magic fans, who don't even care about the NBA and can't name me 2 players on every other team, have this weird sense of entitlement and, like, don't screw us for LeBron James. It's, give me a break. You don't know what you're even talking about. So, at least the Rays fans, they were a happy ilk, whereas Magic are all bitter and, like, angry for no apparent reason.
And I can't understand that as a Magic fan myself. I really can't. So I apologize on behalf of them, but I would not like to be associated with them.
No, you've distanced yourself. I know a few Magic fans who aren't this way, so... Congrats to anybody out there who's looking at this rationally, but if you're not, I mean, just look at the numbers. Let's take opinion out of it. Let's just look at the numbers, okay?
Yeah. All right. I think that about wraps it up for today's show. We got a lot planned for the upcoming week. Like I said earlier, Kyle and I will be on the road to Oklahoma City. Literally, we are driving the 18-hour drive in my Toyota Echo. God bless it. On the way to Oklahoma City. I can't promise what kind of podcast content we're going to have. We might literally do one in my car. We'll do several while we're out there. Absolutely.
We're doing it in the car. Unless we have technical difficulty, I'm committed to at least trying it in the car.
All
Come
right.
on, you can make that commitment.
Right,
here.
There you go. We're going to podcast in the car. Absolutely.
I'll have a Dreamland rib in my mouth during the next podcast.
All right, so look forward to that. Send any feedback to sports@alligator.org, comment on our blogs, and I guess look forward to Barry Maestri next!